Welcome to the Golden State Media Concepts College Football Podcast, your ticket to all things college football. Are you looking to get your college football fix? Looking to get the latest news on your favorite school's team? Join us as we talk college football from the national championship to college rivalries to bowl games to the Heisman Trophy to which conference is the best. We've got you covered for the Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12. ACC, and everything in between.
What is up? Welcome to the GSMC Football Podcast on a Wednesday. My name is Tom Doherty, your host, which means this is going to be the college football edition of the GSMC Football Podcast, which is always brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. So on a Wednesday today here, we're going to go away from the coaches. What we've been talking about, we went through all the coaches of every Power 5 conference in the last couple weeks, and we went and I gave you my top 10 rankings. Pretty self-explanatory up on top. Obviously, a little shaky down through the middle of the rankings, and then rounding it off with Jim Harbaugh at number 10, being the 10th. I'm saying the 10th best coach. I think there's nine guys who have been better than him, or I'm not saying this is for the future, but just based off of what they've been doing in the past, and then maybe a little outlook for the future as well. You got some guys who were new. Kirby Smart was on there. I knew he was a new coach. Didn't put Lincoln Riley on there because they kind of ran out of room, because there's just too much talent. But I think Kirby actually being at a Georgia school, having your first year at an SEC school like that, and being able to get to the win the conference number one in your first year as the head coach in a very tough conference. I mean, sorry, but the Big 12 is not. The Big 12 is not the SEC. You don't have an Auburn. There's no Alabama. There's no Florida. I mean, even Florida. They have Kansas. Kansas is in the Big 12. Once Kansas leaves the Big 12, which they will never do, then we can start comparing it, because that really brings you down. Same thing. Iowa State, really. Texas hasn't done anything in a long time. Oklahoma. Basically, you just got to beat TCU and win your in-state rivalry, and you win the conference. Not that difficult. Win two games, and the other games you should win, or you don't deserve winning the conference anyways. So, I mean, when was the last time did Alabama win the conference? A couple years ago? Because, I mean, basically, the Iron Bowl is the play-in game for the SEC West, and I mean that their coach is on there. Auburn's head coach is on my list. Gus Malzahn's on the list for sure. Obviously, Nick Saban's number one. If I can remember what I did, I can go through really quick what my top 10 was. I think it was. I went Harbaugh number 10. I definitely went Harbaugh number 10. I had Harbaugh number 10. Jimbo Fisher at A&M now, number 9. Chris Peterson at Washington, number 8. Mark Richt at Miami, number 7. And then the guy who took over his former job, I could probably flip-flop Kirby Smart and Mark Richt maybe, but I like Kirby Smart. I mean, at Georgia, he's number 5 or number 6. And then Gus Malzahn's at 5, Dabo Swinney at 4, David Shaw. That's why I love. I just love David Shaw too much. I put him up there at number three because I just love David Shaw and what he's been able to do at Stanford, being able to turn that take what Jim Harbaugh did in turning that program around and not missing a beat and keeping it up there in competition for a Pac-12 championship every year, seemingly up in the top, at least top 15, or the top 25 if they don't lose to SDSU again. And then Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, right? Those two guys are interchangeable. I think they're more. I think I said it on Monday. They're like 1A, 1B for me. Urban Meyer is great. Obviously, been able to have success at so many different places. Florida, Utah, now at Ohio State. Nick Saban's been able to do the same thing. The guy had success at LSU. He didn't have much success in the NFL, but he came back and has not missed a beat at Alabama, winning a bunch of... Obviously, we know what he's done at Alabama. Been very visible. I mean, this is a time where... If you're a good, if you're a sports team that wins a lot, I mean, it was so weird that ESPN, of course, had to set up something where they were comparing whenever, I think this was the first time in 7 years that, or 8 years, that the Alabama championship has not lined up with the LeBron James championship. They had some sort of weird thing set up where every time Alabama won a championship, LeBron was able to win. And then whenever they lost in a Sugar Bowl or in a championship game, LeBron would lose. This is the first year where it didn't match up, where Alabama was able to win and LeBron was not able to win. Sorry, LeBron. Warriors are a little bit too... they're a little too superior for the roster that you had with you. But back to college football. This is the college football show. I can rant about basketball on my free time. But we're going to get into some talk on the transfer rule, which just had a massive blow dealt to it. Or not, well, holding it up, actually. So, you know, the transfer rule for most players, I think that there are, obviously, we saw Shea Patterson get a kind of a pass because the schools were both able to come to an agreement and allow him to play without a year sitting out. But, you know, if you're not a graduate student, if you're still an undergraduate, you have to sit out a year before you can play with the school you've transferred to. And there was actually a lawsuit filed by, I think it was a Northern Illinois punter? It was a punter from Northern Illinois University, Peter Depp, or Deppe, it's D-E-P-P-E, was a part of filed a lawsuit against the NCAA, and it went to the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, and they upheld the lower court also said the same thing. Basically, it was just an appeals process that they've gone through in order to finally end this whole process of trying to sue the NFL or NCAA, that is. But the ruling obviously was focusing on the requirement to sit, that they have to sit out a year, and they upheld it. They said, no, it's not violating antitrust rules. It's not really doing anything wrong. It's been in place for a while, and we're going to keep it that way. There's nothing really we could do. It's not unconstitutional or anything, or any violating any antitrust laws. I mean, the court actually said, and they quoted that, this is what they said in the unanimous opinion, where they accepted the NCAA. They're concerned that an easy transfer would, it said, undermine the amateur character of college athletes, which just makes me think that, oh, we don't want to make it look like it's a professional league where they can just leave. Then again, I mean, transfers are actually way different than leaving for like free agency. You have to wait for your contract to be up. You have contracts in professional sports. I don't know why it would undermine. I mean, maybe the fact that you're promoting too much mobility for college players, and that takes away some sort of amateurism. I mean, I don't. That doesn't really make any sense to me, honestly. The amateur character of college athletes, that doesn't really make much sense, and unless you're just talking about them in general, not when it has to do with the, hey, he's trying to play. What if he or she, it doesn't matter, girl or man or woman, does not matter, girl or boy, girl sport, boy sport, doesn't matter. This is a widespread rule. Obviously, we hear about it a lot more in basketball and football because it's the most visible and most covered college sports in our nation. But I don't know where I don't know where I sit on this. I have to and probably think about it throughout the rest of the segment where I sit on this. I'm kind of more on the fence. I'm like, as much as I understand that there's rules are in place for a reason. I think it would be crazy if they didn't make people sit out for a year. We see transfers all over the place, and you see a lot of volatility, and you see too much mobility. Probably people take advantage of it. That's why you have contracts and free agency in professional sports and trades, where things have to be evenly done. But I think that there should still be, it shouldn't be a hard cap. I think the fact that you had a Shea Patterson rule exemption, where he was not going to play Ole Miss. He was, the university even set it up for him to leave and go to Michigan, and also agreed to work with the University of Michigan to get him eligible to play this year, and they did a lot. It's actually a lot of work. It worked. Both compliance offices have to do work. Have to be in contact with the NCAA, make sure everything is all kosher and everything, so he can get on the field this year without any issues. So it's pretty interesting how they have to go through all this, and now we're getting this kind of reiteration of the rules from the from now a federal court actually. So they're even saying, you know what, yeah, we need kids to stay to sit out for a year. The only problem for me is, like, okay, I do understand, like, there's some kids out there like Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is a perfect example. Jalen Hurts probably won't get the starting job this year at Alabama. He said he wants to transfer. He already has come out and said that. So if he does not get the job at Alabama, he's going to transfer. But he's a, I think, what was he, a sophomore last year? I think he's a redshirt sophomore. So he has 2 more years of eligibility. So he's giving one up. He's saying, all right, opportunity cost here. I don't play. I mean, it's true. They don't really have much leverage. They're not going to play at one school, or they're not going to play for the rest of their career. They're not going to play. Jalen Hurts isn't going to get on the field unless Tua gets hurt, which we don't want to happen, obviously. But say Tua Tagovailoa gets the job at Alabama and Jalen Hurts stays. Only way he gets on the field is if Tua sucks or if he gets hurt. And that's not a great way to get on the field, but I mean, it would do it, but that's the only way he would do it. Probably he would not just going to all of a sudden get the job back. He's not. So what you say is, okay, either I'm going to wait for my opportunity of 2 years, see if I can get back on the field, or I'm just going, you know what, we're going to wait for a year. I'm going to work out. I'm going to go. I mean, the thing is, that's the one thing about the year off. You just can't play. You still can. You're with the team. You're working out. You're learning the playbook. So it actually does give you a year to kind of get accustomed to a new program and a new scenery and a new area for you. I do understand that, but I mean, I don't like their wording. The amateur character of college athletics. That's kind of a joke. I'm not understanding that, but I do get the fact that, yeah, we're not trying to open the floodgates right now. I understand that you'd get parents involved. It is true. Maybe the amateur character. I understand that because now I'm starting to understand it more and more that I think about it, actually, because I'm like, yeah, you would take me away. You're making them seem like more professionals, even though you're still not paying them, but you're going to treat them as if they have the mobility that a NFL player or an NBA player has, even though NFL players, honestly, have you ever read their collective bargaining agreement? That's the thing about difference. That's the difference between amateurism and professionalism. There's things called players unions, and the NFLPA has gotten stomped on by the NFL over the last few years when it comes to, like, Aaron Rodgers. So here's an example. Aaron Rodgers is you have Tom Brady, blah, 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 but best quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion, honestly. Just talent, based off all talent, intangibles-wise. Can't leave. He's locked in Green Bay. Can't leave. Can't go anywhere. If he waits till his contract is up, franchise tag. Doesn't want to sign a new franchise tag. Doesn't matter. You hold out. It's not, doesn't really do the best thing for him to hold out. So he can't leave. He's locked into one of the most unattractive free agent markets ever. I mean, Green Bay, yeah, smallest market. So, I mean, compared to Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard just said he wants to trade. This is the basketball player. I mean, obviously the forward for the San Antonio Spurs. He didn't even play last year. He played, like, what, 6 games last year? So he wanted a trade. So he just says, I want to be a Laker. I don't want to be here anymore. He still has a year left on his contract. Technically, he shouldn't even be allowed to, he shouldn't even be allowed to say anything. You're under contract with the team right now. And the NBA doesn't matter. Nope, we don't care. We don't care. He'll probably end up on the Lakers. That's just the difference between two different leagues. Now you're going to go to an amateur league where if you let transfers just happen willy-nilly, you might get some players who are just like, you know, I want to leave. I'm done. I'm going here right now. I mean, you can maybe if you want, give them like a 2-week zone where they can say they want to make a decision, and then they can try and transfer without waiting, sitting out a year if they do it within a certain time or something like that. So a certain time period, that's something they could do. But I do understand now, thinking about it more and more, it's like, yeah, it probably would take away a little bit of that amateurism, the character of amateurism, and making it too willy-nilly for a transfer. I mean, the fact that there's, it's just 1 year. I do understand that. But the thing is, the one concern I would have is if there's a player who, say, he reached and walked on to a top a Power 5 program, a top program. Say he walked on to, like, South Carolina or something like that. And he walked on, but he made the team, not on scholarship yet, but he's going to sit there. He's on the team, though. As just sitting there practicing. But then to say he gets a option to go play somewhere else. He got inklings. Okay, yeah, this other school wants him. He has another school, lesser school. It's like a small Iowa State or something like that, or a smaller Wake Forest, and he can get a chance to maybe work up to a scholarship there. And he doesn't want to sit out. He's a junior, or he's a sophomore. He doesn't want to sit out his junior. He wants to play only 1 year there. And it's just, you're kind of keyholing these kids a little bit with this transfer rule. But it's been around for a long time. The fact that we're just now getting a lawsuit put in play, or we did have one a little bit ago from that punter, former punter from Northern Illinois, is surprising. It just happened now, but not surprising what the ruling ended up being. All right, that'll wrap it up for the segment. We'll come back and do a little bit more talk on this transfer rule stuff. Maybe some possible other ideas I can think of, but we'll talk about them here. And then we'll also do some recruiting updates, as there's players all over the country deciding where they're going to play their college sports. And we'll give you the updates on that throughout the show. Stay tuned.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
All right, welcome back to GSMC College Football edition of the GSMC Football Podcast on a Wednesday, as we're going to come in and talk. We just talked a little bit about some of the transfer rules that were upheld, actually, after a lawsuit was filed against them, and then it went to a court of appeals and was upheld, stating that the underclassmen still have to sit out a year if they want to transfer. Obviously, there's a little, you can work around it a little bit. Obviously, we saw with Shea Patterson what he's able to do with Michigan and Ole Miss working together to get him allowed to play this coming season. However, there is another story out there that I do need to address and want to address. It's not the most rainbows and butterflies story in the world, but it's something that is going to be on the forefront of the news. It's going to be all over. It's something that needs to be talked about because it was out there, and that's the issue with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is what it's called. That's what the acronym stands for. We all know that at the end of last season in January. We had a young man up at the University of Washington State University, the backup quarterback, Tyler Helinski. He took his own life. We remember when that happened. It was very tragic, a very difficult week to get through. But there was a Sports Illustrated documentary out earlier this week, and his parents also went on the Today Show and did come out and say that Tyler was suffering from CTE, and he had an autopsy. The Mayo Clinic asked for his asked for his brain to be able to do an autopsy to it. And even at the young age of 21 years old, he had the early onset stages of CTE. I don't know exactly how many concussions he had throughout his career in football, or even how old he started playing football. But this is all coming on the heels of some of our favorite NFL stars coming out and saying they don't want their sons playing football. We've already seen that the movies come out, the documentaries, everything that goes with CTE, the cover up job the NFL did with CTE. I mean, this is a situation now. We're now getting into the college football world, and we're probably going to have Mark Emmert, or I don't know. We'll get comments from the commissioner of the Pac-12 as well, but this is an issue. We're seeing it now. We've seen it in 50, 60, 70 year olds who have passed away. Junior Seau, we saw Mike Webster, who was the big focus of that. The first study that they did, this was the Steelers center back. I mean, this guy who got hit in the head almost every play when they were coming together on the line of scrimmage. As a lineman, you have a lot of blows to the head, but this is going to be an issue that isn't going to go away. This is now kind of getting, of course, in our media these days, you can put Will Smith in a movie. You can have an ESPN documentary that gets actually taken off of ESPN and had to be aired on PBS because ESPN wouldn't want to air it because it takes away from some of their market share. No, duh. Do you think that they want the people, less people to watch the NFL? They air one of the biggest football games every week. Have one of the biggest brands in football broadcasting in our country, and at Monday Night Football. So yeah, I think ESPN, even though they had two of their journalists actually investigating this issue back, I think this was 3 or 4 years ago. It was called League of Denial. If you have not watched that podcast, not watched that documentary, it's on PBS. I'm sure you could find it on demand or online. It's called League of Denial. And it's covers the study of Dr. Amalu, who is played by Will Smith, and Dr. McKee, who was able to take over Dr. Amalu's research after he was just absolutely. I mean, this is a guy, Dr. Amalu. If you don't remember who this is, if you haven't seen Concussion with Will Smith, or even seen the documentary, but Dr. Amalu, this is a guy who was an up and coming medical examiner in Pittsburgh at one of the top clinics in the country, and he was given Mike Webster's brain, and he was the first one to really find this issue and identify it and know where it's and start to identify where it's coming from and what stems this issue, and then eventually the NFL took on Roger Goodell, and he was, where do you think he works now? He actually works right on the street. From here in California in Lodi, and well, not on the street, but he works in Lodi in the middle of nowhere. I mean, he loves it. He's doing fine. Believe me, the guy's doing fine. But I mean, this is a guy who could have been working in New York with some of the top crime labs or top medical labs in the world. But now he's out here doing whatever research he's doing in Lodi, and that's what NFL covered up his entire research. And the NFL had, fortunately for them, football is still popular. Football season, fantasy football, everything. We're all excited for it, obviously, to watch. So it kind of like pushes everything under the rug when the season comes around. And we forget, these guys are still getting hit in the head. These guys are still suffering concussions. These guys are still going to have issues when they're older. Of course, Tyler Helinski's mother did come out and say that she does not think that football was the reason why he took his own life. But she did say that they did say that they gave the brain to the clinic in expectation. Not, I wouldn't say expectation, but obviously in hopes that their son was not suffering, but from this issue. But he was, and he had the lesions already at 21 years old, and that only begs the question: what's the future of football? What's the future of youth football? I mean, college football. You have 19, 18 year old kids in there. I mean, I know they start when they're 10, 8, 9 years old with helmets on. I'm glad to see that the flag football is becoming even more and more popular, and we're seeing a lot of highly competitive flag football leagues, because this head-to-head contact is going to be, it's going to catch up with us fast. It's going to catch up really fast, and we don't need to see this anymore. We don't need to see these tragedies anymore. We don't need to see families pulled apart and destroyed and broken like this due to a problem that can be prevented. I mean, it can be prevented, whether it's, I don't know. Just, I know they're trying to develop better helmets. Every year they're trying to develop better turf. They're going to put a concussion thing under the turf to make blows softer. Cause that's the thing you'd be surprised actually how many concussions are caused by the ground when guys fall and girls, same thing, soccer, football. Football is the one that gets the bad sport because it gets the bad rap because it's a collision sport, and we've seen a lot of these guys, whether it's the Junior Seau's or the Mike Websters or this young gentleman here. But I mean, it's not just football. I mean, in soccer you have the same thing. You don't head the ball right, you just collisions, head-to-head collisions. You see the World Cup's going on right now, you see kind of nasty head-to-head collisions. Guys are going up for a ball in the air. It happens. So, I mean, it's not just football. It's around all sports, and we got to figure out a way to make our athletes safer and prevent these tragedies. Look at this guy. This kid was 21 years old. Had everything in front of him. Was at a great school with a great coach, great family. I mean, everything was in front of him. And, I mean, whether you need to just take a moment and kind of think about it. Just like think of whether you're out there, you play youth sports, or somebody in your family plays youth sports and youth football. Take a second look. Maybe think about if your son or daughter wants to play football at a young age. Maybe tell them, you know, you can play flag until this age. You can play this until this age. Start them off a little. Every single day or year that you don't play tackle is another concussion probably less, because you're not going out there trying to get a concussion. You're going out there not to try to get a concussion. Obviously you want to keep yourself safe, but it's called an occupational hazard. It's called being out there. There's concussions in every sport, honestly, but the numbers and the consistency that happens in soccer and football, especially because football is that collision sport where you can glance helmets, or you can get tackled wrong and get smushed on the ground. It doesn't matter. There's so many different ways you get hit. You can hit your own teammate. I mean, it's just so many different ways for it to happen. I'm not saying it's the only sport that it does happen, but just the opportunity for it to happen is too great, and we don't need to see anything like this. It just sucks. When I saw this report out that they did find the evidence of stage one, which is understandable. The kid was 21 years old, but to find anything at all. I mean, this is a kid where he's probably going to play football. I don't know if he's an NFL prospect or not, but it doesn't matter. It's just he's going to play football continuing on, and he didn't know. You have no idea. There's no symptoms until you're older. There's kids that go watch these interviews. Go watch the stuff they talked about with Mike Websters. The guy could barely remember where he was. He couldn't barely drive back to his house. It's horrible. It's horrible. And it's something that we need to, the NFL, whether they're going to start pouring money into the research or start pouring money into the protection of their players, because it's going to start happening. Dominoes are going to fall. The chickens are going to come to roost, and the NFL can only cover it up for so long, because they've known about this for a long time. It's crazy how long they've known about this for. So, whether they've started, I know the PR people in the NFL front office have really been working and have trying to make their money, whether it's domestic violence issues or it's substance abuse issues, or now we're getting into a problem where the game and we've already had people say, oh, if 10% of mothers don't decide to have their sons play football, the sport is over. I'm like, I don't know about that. 10%. I don't know about that. There's a lot of people out there playing football. There's a lot of youth sports leagues, a lot of competitiveness. There's entire parts of this country that bleed and breed football. I think it's okay for now. Obviously this is an issue that happened for a player up in Washington, whether it's a culture situation. I know we have people, I don't want to keyhole different parts of our country at all. I want to be more in the middle here, but you know that there's definitely cultures in different parts of our country And that sometimes if you get in certain parts, is football is pretty much everything. And they don't really, I don't want to say they're ignorant, I don't want to say they don't care, but this, it's just almost too ingrained into their lifestyle where they really need a big wake-up call. And football is not going anywhere. But it just, if it, and I don't really want it to go anywhere. I love the sport, I love watching the sport, but it needs to be safer. It needs to be a situation, and needs to get to a situation where we, I know the concussions aren't completely preventable, but just the number needs to go down. The number, the frequency, the number of concussions needs to go down in the sport, or we're going to see a mass amount of ex players, or maybe even current players, start having symptoms or having issues, and we're going to be like, oh, why didn't we pay attention to this earlier? All right, that'll wrap it up for this segment. Didn't really, this kind of just came up on me. I'm like, oh, I got to talk about this. This is an issue that I have been covered. I did a lot of research about this in college. I did a whole, whole expose and deep dive research in this. So the stuff that Dr. Omalu has done and the stuff that Dr. McKee has done is definitely worth going and finding out and going and researching for yourself. Whether you're out there and you have kids and you have a son who wants to play tackle football, or you have a daughter who wants to play soccer, I would say hold off for a little bit and get them out there. And I mean, I'm all for keeping your kids active. That's all. I don't want to say don't keep your kids inside and play video games. No. Get out there, play sports, but do it in the most safe way possible, and maybe hold off on that tackle football until high school, maybe, or maybe even I'd say eighth grade at the earliest for me. Honestly, eighth grade is the earliest for me, and then maybe seventh grade, but eighth grade, seventh grade is at the earliest. And have them play flag. You get out there, you can run around, get some great cardio, and go have some fun. So I'll leave it on that note, and we'll come back after the break and talk about some of these recruiting updates and see where the next big star is going to be playing around our country in college football. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the SMC Football Podcast on a Wednesday, the college football edition of this podcast with your host, Tom Doherty, as we're back here for the third segment of the day. I do want to just leave this story on this note, though. If you do want to get involved with this cause, with helping find out more about CTE, get involved there. The Helinskys have actually set up a foundation called Helinsky's Hope, a foundation to help schools better support athletes dealing with mental illness. And that's something definitely I would look to get involved with, because that's a big deal. It's a big, big deal. These are young kids. These are still are developing their brains are still kind of being molded into the adults that they're going to become. So even at 21 years old, I know, yeah, legally you're an adult, but your brain's not done. Your brain's not done developing until at least 23, 24, 25 years old, especially for males. So the fact that this has happened, and now his parents are starting this foundation is a nice thing. Obviously, it's tough to deal with, and is a tough story to get through. But if you do want to help, definitely reach out to that foundation, as it's this definitely for a good cause, and it's a good good start for that family to get back on their grieving track there with that foundation in Tyler's memory. So. I just wanted to let you guys know that that there is something you can do to help this cause. All right, getting into some more stuff with the transfers. We do have a three-star quarterback, Dana Holgorsen's son, down. This is Logan Holgorsen, the son of the Dana Holgorsen, is a head coach at West Virginia, has actually switched his commitment. He flipped. He was going to go to North Texas, and now he's going to be going to Bowling Green. He's a three-star prospect from Morgantown. I think that he wanted to go to North Texas because of the fit that he had, but now he says that he'll be able to get under a guy who is with Coach Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech. That's the head coach at Bowling Green now. But his name is Mike Jinks, a former Texas Tech assistant. So you have him going over there to play for Coach Jinks. All right, and then next, Michigan actually has landed a few guys. They landed a bunch of defensive guys, it looks like. A defensive tackle, Mozzie Smith. So actually, one defensive guy, a couple offensive guys. So Mozzie Smith's going. He's a 6'3", 285-pound defensive lineman out of East Kentwood High School in Michigan. And then he was he was the highest ranked. He's the highest ranked commitment in this is a 2019 guy, so this is not for this coming season. Obviously, this is for next season. These are all incoming seniors. So you know, if you're being recruited as a junior and you're going to be signing as a incoming senior in the middle of your junior and senior year of high school, I think you're looking pretty good. So if you're a Michigan fan, got to be excited for a nice big lineman to come to your school, young kid. That's pretty nice as you have that. And then they have a couple different guys, the running back. I'm going to see if I can pronounce his name right. Zach Charbonnet or Charbonnet. I'm sure it's Charbonnet. It's a running back. He's a four-star guy. This is in the three-star tight end. Eric All has also committed. So the Charbonnet and All did commit on Sunday. And then you have Mozzie Smith coming in after that. So a lot of the big young guys coming over to Michigan. I mean, that's the thing. You got to be able to keep your turnover well. That's one thing I think Jim Harbaugh might have been lacking on a little bit in his first 3 years. It's that recruiting trail. He's supposed to be this crazy recruiter who goes out. I mean, I know he got in, there was all that story about the satellite camps and everything that they were trying to change ups and stuff, not make it so hard for these smaller schools to get the recruits, and these big schools are just running all these satellite camps and they can get all the big guys no matter what. Jim Harbaugh can be like in four places at once, which is pretty crazy. But now he's down. I mean, they get the did a guy from the ESPN 300 defense. They get a couple of highly ranked offensive guys. I know running backs are I'd be like, some recruiting stuff I've heard about, like they're like, oh, you're going to recruit a quarterback every other year. So you have a freshman quarterback and a junior quarterback and then a sophomore quarterback and a senior quarterback every year, which seems pretty I mean, that makes sense. Or, I mean, usually every position you're going to do that. I think running backs, you need a running back every year. Running backs are kind of the dime a dozen position. You get grounded and pounded easily. You get worn down. You should be rotated out. I think now that what you see in the NFL game is where a two, even a three-back set rotation is effective. I mean, you saw the Super Bowl winning champions last year. You had LeGarrette Blount for short yardage. You had J.H.I. For more of your bell cow early or first second down back. And then you have Corey Clement as your third down speed back, catch the ball out of the backfield as well. So you have a lot of different options. The Patriots did the same kind of thing with three guys. They had Burkhead, Deion Lewis, and James White. Now they have Jeremy Hill instead of Deion Lewis. So you see a lot of that all over the place. We're going to be getting a lot of three running backs in the NFL, probably also in the college game. I mean, these freshmen are going to play, unless they're obviously redshirting. They're going to play a lot of the time. So we're probably going to see these guys that I just said earlier rather than later when it comes to the 2019 season. So now with that commitment from Smith, Michigan now has a total of 14 commitments in the class of 2019. Seven of them are actually ranked in that top three ESPN 300. So a bunch of talent as Jim Harbaugh getting his recruiting shoes on and working that out. So that's a pretty good one right there. Looking at some more stuff, I do want to actually also talk about some guys that you might be forgetting on these top 25 teams. We'll do that actually probably in the final segment today, as I do want to keep it going with this keep it going with this these class rankings. So it looks like Auburn and Notre Dame, as we do a little update on these. I mean, we talked about last time with Alabama and Texas A&M actually were up there in the class rankings and when it comes to recruiting. So it looks like Notre Dame and Auburn are starting to trend up. As I mean, it only takes a couple of guys. I mean, it only takes a couple of guys to make a class. I think, I mean, maybe more, it does take a couple of guys. I think one is probably not enough. You probably need like two or three or four guys that will make it worthwhile for, I mean, make or break your your draft class or your recruiting class, not draft class, but recruiting class. I think that when you have a school like Notre Dame, it can be kind of tough. Same thing I've talked about it with Stanford, where their schedules are so rigorous. Notre Dame, you have to be whether it's a character kind of character test they give or whatever Brian Kelly's rule is, or his litmus test to make sure a guy can actually make it through the rigors that Notre Dame requires at their university. Because it's not you got religious stuff, you got your school stuff, you got your football stuff, obviously. It's same thing. It's like Stanford. It's crazy how these programs, though. I mean, Michigan, honestly, Michigan, same kind of thing. Michigan is a very, 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 very good university academically staying. But for these private schools, I don't understand how these kids are able to go through these schedules. This is ridiculous. I think I talked about it last episode. It's like Stanford's like, what? You wake up, weights, practice, class, study hall, film, eat somewhere in the middle there. I have every repeat every day, every single day, homework. I mean, every single thing, it seems to be the issue. So looking at these recruiting rankings for the 2019 class, Alabama still reigns supreme. Number one, obviously, is they have that 16 recruits so far with that average of rating at 93 points rating. So they have not only the 16 guys, they got 16 really good guys. Michigan trending up. Notre Dame, like I said, trending up from where they were. Auburn also coming up a little bit too. So looking pretty good as far as these all these schools. I mean, these are all blue collar schools. It's crazy. All these true blue red blooded schools. I mean, the top 10 right now: Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, Clemson, Michigan, Oklahoma, Oregon. Actually, good for Oregon to get back up there. They need to get back. So I think college football is the Pac 10 is Pac 12 is well represented with good teams. Obviously, we had last year. Even it's weird. Last year was weird. They had two of the best quarterbacks in the league. UCLA wasn't that good, and USC barely made it to a bowl game because they were able to squeak past Stanford to win the Pac 12 championship game. So, I mean, that was kind of Sam Darnold just dragging them along, and then UCLA, they had to come back from were they down by, like, what, 30 against Texas A&M? I think that's what got Kevin Sumlin fired at the end of it. That was really the nail in the coffin, the fact that he let Josh Rosen come back in that game. I think that they're the Pac-12 is better when there is like two good teams in there's better teams fighting for it. So Oregon hopefully will be good this year, but not being. I think that the problem is sometimes they do get too many good teams or too many decent teams where they're like not one can actually come through undefeated. That can be a problem too. Where that's why you'll leave like last year. Your champion was USC, and they were kind of beat up by the end of the year with some not a great resume. So they can have a problem where a Washington might get beat by a Oregon, and then Oregon might get beat by a Stanford, and a Stanford might get beat by a Washington. So they all kind of knock each other down, and nobody can really pull through to become a one loss team or even an undefeated team. So Oregon's at number 7 right now. Notre Dame at 9. Mississippi State out there with the big dogs at they're at number 9. Notre Dame's at 8, and then Ohio State's at 10. So, and then Georgia underneath them at 11. So that's pretty interesting. Georgia did just make a jump from 14 to 11. So they only have 10 guys right now. But so this is a big deal. Obviously, people can forget it because you don't really know who these guys' names are. But this has to do with what you're going to be seeing on the field For the next few years, in the next couple of years. So you have to really pay attention to who is the next big guy, who's going to be making these plays. And it comes with these recruits. I mean, the fact that we have companies and ESPN does their evaluations all the way into high school and have the ESPN 300 lists and all this stuff, it goes to show you that there's a lot to be found and a lot to be known when it comes to guys that are going to be coming out of high school and going to these big colleges. Obviously, there's always another guy. There's always another big guy. I mean, it's seeming like every year, it was like, oh, once in a lifetime talent or something like that. Like, well, didn't we just have that last year? Like, who's really going to be able to do it? Is Kyler Murray really going to be able to do it? Is he going to be able to take over this Oklahoma team and be like Baker Mayfield last year, or should he go play football? I mean, so we'll go play baseball. I think either way, he's going to play baseball. That's a whole different story with the Kyler Murray stuff. All right, that'll wrap it up for this segment, as we'll take a quick break and come back and do some more talk on this college football stuff. We'll go over the some of these guys that you might not be told to notice about. I mean, not too in the know about what I'm saying. Underrated players that might fly under the radar, and you might actually find out about them this coming season. So we'll go over a couple of different guys and also talk more recruiting when we come back after the break. So stay tuned.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the SMC Football Podcast, the college football edition on a Wednesday today here, final segment of the day, as I'm going to bring up some guys that you might not remember too much from last year, as they are flying under the radar. One for as only ESPN comes out every year with all these different lists, whether it's the one players to player to watch, or you know, top guys for every team and stuff like that, and then come out with this underrated players. I like to go pick through different guys that I've noticed before, and just kind of bring back up to the fold, as every team has one. I mean, now we have, with guys up in the top 10, I mean, Michigan's number 10 right now. Their guy that you need to notice is their running back, underrated running back. That's Karen Higdon. This is a guy, I mean, obviously this is a team where their defense is going to be more of the visible, I mean, a big attention grabbing part of this team. You kind of forget. I mean, you kind of forget how their offense is going to be the more dynamic offense, I think, this year. The fact that you have a quarterback coming in and going to be working with this new offense, you're going to have to give him a little bit of backup, and that's going to be where the running backs are going to come into play, as carrying Higdon could be a guy to do that, as he is a guy with breakaway speed and a good runner in the hole and finding holes in that line, so he can be able to kind of bounce around there and get things done for the Wolverines. Another guy, as I want to go down to my school, Jake, at Stanford, is actually something. When I was looking through the list, I'm like, wait, they put a punter on here? And yeah, that's Jake Bailey at Stanford. I'm like, oh yeah, duh, he's really, really, he's actually pretty good. You kind of forget about punting, but punting can be a big deal for football, especially college football. I know the NFL sometimes too, but playing field position, it matters. And Stanford, they play a lot of field position game. David Shaw can be kind of conservative sometimes. Well, he'll put it in the hands of the special teams to make a play, and Jake Bailey's been pretty good. I mean, averages a punt of over 45 yards a punt last year. Has been able to pin kicks inside that 20 yard line on a good clip last year. So he'll look to do it again this coming season. We'll see if the Stanford will need some help. I think they'll be fine with getting the ball into the end zone, or at least down into a scoring position with Bryce Love this year. Going up to the top, so they're looking like at some of the two schools that were in the College Football Final of the National Championship last year. Georgia, J.R. Reed is a DB for them, as they have had some question marks during spring football regarding their secondary. Hopefully Reed can shore that up, as obviously Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter were gone. Smith was more of obviously he's a linebacker, but this Georgia defense is going to have to revamp itself this year. That was a big strength for them last year. This year you need to be able to have that security on the back end. They're going to have good pass rush, I think, but they have to be able to have that secondary backup, basically, to have that safety blanket over the top. As far as J.R. Reed is, he did have a pretty good season last year with that 79 tackles, two picks, and six QB hurries as he was coming in as a blitzer as well. So be able to have a versatile defensive back like that, to be able to come in off the blitz, timing the snap right, be able to get into the backfield, and also being very effective in coverage as well. So gotta like that from your Georgia Bulldogs there. At Alabama, it's Damian Harris, actually. So Damian Harris, remember him from, we did watch him a little bit as that backup for Bo Scarborough last year in the national championship game throughout the playoffs. He actually was change of pace kind of thing is what I'm trying to say here. Alabama, they have a bunch of different debates to go on, especially the Jalen Hurts to Tagovailoa one. But right now, actually, it's the guy who was playing underneath Damian Harris, that's also Najee Harris, who's a big deal as well. So you have to think about those two, the battle of the Harrises, as you have Bo Scarborough gone, and those two guys will be taking care of the running back duties at Alabama this year. Another guy, Kendall Joseph, as Clemson looks to revamp their defense. At Clemson, obviously, with the defensive line is just fine. They're not, no questions asked there, but it looks like that we're gonna have to get some help from the linebacking core, obviously, because that's how defenses work. But it looks like that Kendall Joseph is a guy who he flies under the radar because he plays linebacker. I mean, when you have a defensive line as good as Clemson's is, you're gonna be kind of lost, obviously. You're gonna obviously be playing pretty good as well too, because they'll be able to give you holes to get into that backfield and make plays, whether it's a sack or a tackle for loss. But it looks like that this is a guy who we're going to be hearing the name of quite a bit this coming season. Clemson will be just fine. I mean, Joseph in his career has collected, I mean, actually 222 career tackles. I mean, 18 and a half for loss. I mean, you kind of forget these no-name guys. You think in college football, you kind of forget about them sometimes. All these guys coming in and out, a lot of revolving door action. But there's definitely somebody to recognize there at that level. All right. That's enough of those. We all love the underrated players, but we can go back over to those players to watch. I think I just did the top 10 last time, as I do want to go and talk about a little bit about some quarterbacks. Trace McSorley is a guy who I think might surprise some people this year. No more Saquon Barkley, but if he can start really making plays with his arm and legs, then he's going to be a Heisman Trophy favorite, I think. By midseason, I think he might be, because Penn State, they have the weapons to do it. They're going to have defense to get the ball back. He's going to have the ball a lot this year. You got James Franklin, who's a great innovator on offense. I think he's going to be in a position where, I mean, yeah, I know he's a little undersized, but we saw what Baker Mayfield can do. I think he's gonna, obviously being in the Big Ten, it might be a little bit of a difficult issue because of the fact that you're going to be playing against different, not Kansas and Iowa State or something like that. Well, obviously Oklahoma lost to Iowa State, but you're going to play against Ohio State and Michigan and Michigan State and Wisconsin and Nebraska and all these big schools. Even Northwestern is a pretty well known. Big. Well, they are, but a pretty good program aiming for another big year this year. So the Big Ten is a little bit more competitive, I think. So getting Trace McSorley to a level where he's going to start getting some Heisman Trophy pump is going to be the goal, I think, this year for Penn State. Because if they do that, that means they're winning. The best way to get publicity and to get more buzz for you for a Heisman Trophy candidacy is to have your team win. And obviously putting up big numbers in those wins is a nice little is some help to that level, obviously, to that cause. But obviously winning is a big deal when it comes to awards and becoming the best player. Obviously, I mean, we saw Lamar Jackson. Louisville didn't do that all that much when he won. He just put up crazy numbers. They won a bunch of games, don't get me wrong, but you saw what that could happen there. But Trace McSorley, I love what he could do. You watch some of his highlights. He makes all throws. Reminds you a lot of the kind of like, you know, little laser throws you saw from Baker Mayfield, finding the small spots. The more you can show me in tight coverage, the more I'm comfortable with you and playing in the next level, because the NFL is all small windows. It's all throwing receivers open. It's all creating plays that aren't there, that you can just make plays, seeing things that not everybody can see. And if you can show you can do that at the college level, and the Big Ten is a test. The Big Ten's no slouch. So the Big Ten, you're playing against NFL players. You're playing against Ohio State. They have NFL players. You're playing against Michigan. They got NFL players. You're playing against Michigan State. They have NFL players. Washington, Wisconsin has NFL players. That's who you're playing against. So if you can put up big numbers in the Big Ten, same kind of thing as the SEC, you're going to be just fine. And I know he's a little bit undersized. Trace McSorley is, but what he's been able to do at Penn State is pretty amazing. And obviously having Saquon Barkley last year is a nice little addition, a nice little secondary option, throwing him out of the backfield. But I mean, I'm assuming James Franklin's gonna be just fine when it comes to getting a replacement in there. I don't think he's gonna be automatically be the same level as Saquon. I'm not the biggest Saquon fan, just to be honest. Or at least I'm a Saquon fan. He's a great player, but as far as outlook to the NFL. But you know, that's a conversation for a different time. I think you've heard about it enough already. Go listen to the GSMC Fantasy Football Show if you have a chance, and you'll hear about my thoughts on Saquon, because obviously he's way up there on the draft boards for fantasy football for some reason. But I think that as far as college goes and his alma mater goes, Penn State is in good hands with Trace McSorley at quarterback. Another guy, obviously, we talked about Bryce Love a lot on the show, and how I think that if he could stay healthy all of last season, they better just give him the Heisman. I'm sorry, I know there's only been two running backs in the last decade, I think, and they both went to Alabama and Chris McCaffrey should have won his too, but the East Coast bias kind of gets in, it comes into play, because nobody can watch these guys. Stanford plays a lot of their games at 7 o'clock at night on Saturday, so the East Coast voters aren't going to be up to watch that, so you're not going to be able to see Bryce. And honestly, please just go watch his highlights, because they'll look even better when they're all cut up together like that. So he's an explosive player, and is definitely deserving if he can put up the numbers he did, or he has put up in his career at Stanford. So I think that you have to take him into consideration, obviously, along with all these other guys like a Trace McSorley, like a Kyler Murray, like a Tua Tagovailoa or DeAndre Swift at Georgia. So, I mean, there's going to be we thought that last year's running back class was good. This coming year is going to be good, too, if you're thinking about the outlook for the NFL draft. I mean, you got DeAndre Swift. I think he might have a couple more years or a year or two. Yeah, and then Bryce Love's going to come out. You have Jonathan Taylor coming out. So there's going to be a couple different guys I think we'll find out through the rest of the year. I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but we're going to see some players, and they're going to be, it's going to be pretty interesting looking to see the outlook for even for next year's draft, even though we just had this year's draft and we have some rookies to talk about there. You know, this is a college football show, but as far as rookies, I did want to, in the last minute of this show, I know we look players to watch for in the college football in the college football world, but look at some of these these guys who were just playing college football last year. Just playing last year, and they're going to be in the NFL for the first year this year. That's like Saquon. I think the best rookie this year is going to be, I know he got, everybody's like, why did he get picked so early? He was a fourth pick of overall last year, Cleveland Browns, Denzel Ward. I know he plays defense, not the sexiest position, but he plays cornerback, and it's a big deal. I know he plays for the Browns. Kind of wish he ended up going to a more easier team to watch, but I want to watch him this year. Great guy to look forward to. Obviously, we have the quarterbacks. That's kind of a no-brainer. I think the only quarterback who's really going to play this year is Josh Rosen, I think. Maybe a little bit of Sam Darnold. And the Baker Mayfield, maybe. But definitely Saquon. Denzel Ward, got to watch them. Also, want to watch the youngest, one of the younger players in the NFL this year, Tremaine Edmonds. I think where did he go? Did he get picked by the? I think his brother got picked by the Steelers. Tremaine Edmonds got picked by somebody else. I could look that up. But he's going to be a guy, a linebacker, very athletic, very fast linebacker to look at. And then obviously the two linemen from Notre Dame are going to make immediate impacts as well. So lots of good college football talent coming up to the football world right now and into the NFL right now as well. All right, that'll wrap it up for the show today. As we went through a bunch of different stuff, had some solemn things to talk about. As obviously, there's a big deal going on with health and player safety in around football and around sports in general. Obviously, when there's a tragedy that happens and things come out after, we do like to address them and bring it to your knowledge here, so everybody's well informed. And like I said, if you do want to support that. That foundation, the Helsinki Foundation, to help schools assist their students that are dealing with mental illness. That's definitely something that you can get involved in, and I'm sure you can just go search Helsinki Foundation, and you'll be able to figure out how to spread your love and spread your assistance to them on their website. So I'll wrap it up for now. We'll be back on Friday for another edition of the GSMC Football Podcast, the college football edition. My name is Tom Doherty. Everybody have a good middle of your week. Happy Wednesday, and we'll see you on Friday. Bye.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.